Hallo, schön, dass du da bist, hier beim Podcast Happy, Holy and Confident, dein Podcast fürs Herz und den Verstand. Mein Name ist Laura Marlina Seiler und Freunde der Sonne, heute gibt es ein Interview auf die Ohren, wo ich mich wirklich wie ein kleiner Glückskeks gefreut habe, dass es endlich da ist und dass Dr. Martha Beck in den Podcast gekommen ist. Martha Beck ist eine Frau, die mich seit Jahren inspiriert, die mich wahnsinnig begleitet hat auf meinem eigenen Weg. Vor allen Dingen ihr Buch The Way Back to Integrity, wo es darum geht, wieder in die eigene Integrität zu kommen und ja, sich mit der eigenen Integrität zu verbinden. Und dieses Buch hat mir wahnsinnig geholfen und ich kann es nur empfehlen, das zu lesen. Und umso mehr habe ich mich dann gefreut, als Martha Beck zugesagt hat und gesagt hat, sie kommt in dem Podcast zu Gast. Denn Marthas Leben war auch von sehr, sehr vielen Herausforderungen geprägt, von denen sie auch im Interview erzählen wird, wo es wirklich darum ging, schwierige Lebensentscheidungen zu treffen, sich von Menschen zu trennen, sich zum Teil sogar von ihrer Familie zu trennen, um ihre eigene Wahrheit leben zu können, um das machen zu können, was ihr Herz ihr sagt, was sie tun sollte. Sie ist wahnsinnig intelligent. Oprah sagt über sie, sie ist eine der mit Abstand intelligentesten Frauen, die es gibt. Und das kann ich nur bestätigen. Sie ist so eloquent, so witzig, so einfach so vielseitig, so toll. Und in dem Interview geht es darum, wie du wirklich in Kontakt kommen kannst mit deiner inneren Ganzheit, mit deiner inneren Vollkommenheit. Wir reden über Integrität, wie wir da hinkommen können, was uns aber auch im Weg stehen kann, wie wir mit unseren Ängsten umgehen können, wenn es darum geht, in mehr integer zu werden und zu sich selber zu stehen. Wir reden darüber, wie wir mit Angst umgehen können, sie wirklich integrieren können in uns selbst. Und über so viele andere Sachen, die mich so tief berührt haben in meinem Herzen. Und nach diesem Interview war ich so beseelt und einfach so verbunden auch mit mir selbst. Und ich hoffe, dass das dieses Interview auch dir schenken wird. Ganz viel Geborgenheit, Vertrauen in deinen Weg. Und das Interview ist auf Englisch. Du findest natürlich wie immer die deutsche Übersetzung auch auf meiner Webseite. Und du kannst auf YouTube einfach die Untertitel anstellen, wo sie auf Deutsch dann mitlaufen, dass du mitlesen kannst, wenn du möchtest. Ansonsten ist Martha aber auch richtig, richtig gut zu verstehen. Und ja, lass dich inspirieren, lass dich mitnehmen, lass dich vor allen Dingen mitnehmen in deine eigene Integrität, in das Wissen, dass du, so wie du bist, richtig bist, dass du dein Leben so leben darfst, wie du es für dich als richtig empfindest und dass wir uns frei machen dürfen von diesen äußeren Begrenzungen und immer mehr in unsere innere Wahrheit kommen dürfen. Und ich wünsche dir jetzt ganz viel Spaß mit dem Interview mit Martha Beck. Schön, dass du da bist. I am so excited, so happy to have Martha Beck on the podcast. Really, like, you are my hero. You are one of the women who really, really, really helped me to understand the concept of integrity and to explain it in a way to me that was so helpful and healing and empowering. And for me, you were a big, big part of my own healing journey. And your book, The Way Back to Integrity, is like my Bible. So really welcome on the show, Martha. So, so happy to have you here.
Oh, thank you so much. It's incredible to write a book alone on lockdown, right? And then a couple of years later, when we didn't know what would happen, I'm talking to you and the book is a reality and all your listeners are like, have made it through this incredible, tough passage.
Yeah.
So I'm just thrilled to be here. Thank you so much.
And it's the thing that I loved about your book and about your whole being is you're so honest and like you have this deep vulnerability in everything you tell. And this, it touched me in so many moments and I just felt this connection with you the way, because I was listening it in the audiobook.
Right.
I think with the voice always you feel like more connected. And so just thank you for sharing and for writing this amazing book.
Thank you.
for everyone who hasn't yet read the book, what is your definition of integrity? Like what is integrity?
Yeah. So the first thing to get rid of is the idea that it's something you would hear at church. Like you should all have integrity or God will smite you or whatever. I don't believe that. I'm spiritual, but not religious. But the word integrity just means intact. or whole. It means that you're a whole person and that you're the same person in all the different circumstances of your life. So you don't present one self to one group and then a different self to another group, or feel, you know how we feel different when we're in communication with different people. And sometimes, for example, you could leave a conversation and think, I don't even believe what I was saying. It was peer pressure. That's a loss of integrity. You're not being immoral. You are actually trying to be good. You have, in some way, sold out your true nature because of your socialization. And that really is the reason most people lose their integrity. It's not about telling lies or being bad. It's about losing ourselves because of our socialization and then reclaiming ourselves, which allows us to really bring truth and love and true beauty and power to the relationships, even the ones that made us lose our integrity.
So would you say that when I listen to you, would you say that if we are not in like aligned with our integrity, is it like wearing a mask, or is it like that we put something on ourselves to try to be someone who we are not?
That's an interesting metaphor. Yeah, that's very, very appropriate as a metaphor. Another metaphor that I use is an airplane. Because if an airplane, some jet airplanes have over 4 million parts. And if a lot of those go out of kilter, the plane will crash. All of them have to be working together harmoniously. So each part has to be doing its job pretty well. And then the integrity, the structural integrity of the airplane, the whole airplane has to be connected to itself properly. And then it can fly. Then this big piece of metal can carry us through the sky. And our own lives are the same way. When all our little parts are aligned and we're sort of, if our minds hold thoughts that are true at the deepest level of our core being, if our thoughts and actions are in harmony with what is deepest inside us, we are in structural integrity and we can fly.
That's a good picture.
I was going to say not literally, but that's not true. We literally can fly with machines. If we get the inspiration right, the patience to make it real right, and the math right. So body, heart, mind, and soul, they all have to be aligned, and then truly miraculous things can happen.
That's true. So in your book, you have this beautiful metaphor of Dante and Dante's Inferno, which I think is a brilliant idea. Yeah, and maybe you can walk like quickly through the phases of Dante, like what he's going through, sure. And in which ways this is like the representation of our way in finding our integrity. And maybe especially what I find really interesting is, and you write about it in the book as well, that we try to kind of avoid the inferno. Like, we don't want to go into the inferno because it feels terrible. Like, it's terrible. No one wants to be there. And at the same time, we have to go through inferno to come out like on the other side of the earth and to find like heaven. And maybe you can also go a little bit into cool. like the what tools can we use in the midst of the inferno to trust that we will walk out of that and we will be more connected to ourselves.
Wonderful. Yeah, I truly do not remember the moment I decided to use the Divine Comedy as the sort of the subtext for this book. I don't speak Italian. I was not particularly fond of the Divine Comedy, but there was one metaphor at the beginning. Well, everything about it pulled me in. And then once I got in, I started to see, oh my God, this is why this is called the greatest work of literature in the West. This is a brilliant psychological metaphor for everything a human being needs to be happy. So it starts, you know, Dante says, in the middle of this, our life, I found myself alone in a dark forest. It's gloomy and it's scary. And he cannot remember how he got there. But he does say the true way had been lost. He just sort of wandered off. And he sort of comes to himself. He goes, what? Now, how many? That's a midlife crisis, right? In the middle of your life, you go, what?
And how did I get here?
Right. How did I get here? I don't remember. I just made a lot of choices. I don't know. So then he's like desperate to get away. And he sees this beautiful mountain and it's shiny and gold in the morning sunlight. And all these people are climbing it. And he thinks, okay, that's the way out. So he starts to try to climb the mountain of gold. To me, that's a metaphor for all the things culture tells us will make us happy. The mountain of gold is always, it could be beauty, power, sex, fame, but it's always money. It's always money, right? So he's trying to climb the mountain of gold, and he keeps getting chased away by wild beasts that make him feel depressed and anxious, and he just keeps ending up in the dark forest. And then the soul of the poet Virgil, his favorite poet, shows up and says, oh, you can't get out of the dark wood that way. You have to go through here. And he takes him to a doorway in the forest. And you may remember, if all of you have been reading Dante lately, above the door is a sign that says, abandon all hope, ye who enter here, which doesn't strike Dante as a good idea. But Virgil is like, nope, I promise this is the way. So in they go. And it's horrible. It is so horrible. And he goes down and down and down through the circles of hell, and things get worse and worse. And people are in there for different reasons. The interesting thing, if you really read this book, it's radical for being written in the 14th century. Nobody really has to be there. Like, they just, three-fourths, more than that, more than three-quarters of hell is occupied by people who are there by accident. And they just, they were going along and they accidentally did something wrong and now they're in hell and they can't figure it out. And all Virgil tells Dante to do is you go to each trapped soul. And these, to me, this is a metaphor for every part of us that is a trapped soul. And there are many parts of us that get to, that feel like trapped souls, because that's the fragmentation that is our loss of identity. So Virgil lets him do two things: ask questions from the demons about why they're there and what's getting them stuck there. And number two, he has to keep going. They don't keep going. So any part of us that believes a lie, say it's something like the lie, you're not good enough. A lot of people end up with that one. Sometimes people tell them that as children. Sometimes it's just that we live in a society that ranks everyone and they don't rank well somewhere. And so they all end up thinking, oh, I'm not good enough. I'm not good enough. That is a chain that binds you in hell. And to get out of hell, you have to question it. Are you sure that's true? And this is the coming back to integrity. To say, okay, take your worst belief, the thing that makes you suffer the most, I'm not good enough. Go to the part of you that is at the very, very core and drop that question in like you're dropping it into a well and say, can I absolutely know it's true that I am not enough? And you just wait. You wait for all your systems to align. You're not waiting for a quick answer. You're not waiting for your mother's answer or your preacher's answer. You're waiting for your soul's answer. And when you go deep enough, your soul will say, will give you a very simple response. I am not good enough. Is that true? No. All right, you just broke a chain. You can move on to the next demon. And he goes all the way to the center of the earth where the monster Lucifer, the fallen angel, is trapped in the ice. Laura, I don't know if you've ever had depression.
Yeah, I had years of it.
Yeah. It's not a fiery place where Dante puts the devil. He's frozen into a lake of ice. And isn't that what it feels like to be depressed? Nothing moving, no hope, cold, emotionally cold. And Virgil says, you have to keep going down, even through this. And he's like, down, there is no more down. This is the center of the earth. And there's a monster. He has to climb onto the body of the fallen angel of Lucifer and lower himself, because this huge monster. And then he passes the center of the earth and he actually has to turn around, because from then on, he is going away from the center of the earth, which is going up. So by going down through our deepest sorrows, our deepest beliefs that we have lost things, that we will never achieve, the things that hurt us most, if we go all the way through them in a quest for truth, we never have to reverse course. We end up going the same direction, and what was down becomes up. And the last few verses of the Inferno are like, yeah, and then we walked up and we were on the surface again. And we beheld the stars. And from there on, he's on his way to paradise, And then, well, purgatorio comes first. He has to get rid of all the actions that were based on these false beliefs. So he climbs a mountain that is exactly, it's the earth that was displaced when Lucifer fell, and it made a mountain. He goes all the way up it by living the truth he now embraces. So for us, you go into your personal hell and say, I'm not enough. Okay, that's not true. That is not true. And you feel the alignment clicking in as you start, you come to the right answer. No, it's not true. Okay, wow, that's a relief. Then you go see your parents. Now it's time for purgatorio. Your parents are like, you're not enough. And you have to be willing to sit there and say, I don't believe you. You know, I love you. I don't believe you. Sorry, you're wrong about this. And hold your ground. You have to go into work to your boss who is sexist or racist or whatever, and you're the person who is lower on the social totem pole, and they say, you're no good, and you have to look them straight in the eye and not believe it, to stay in your integrity. And as you go through these situations that test you, you get cleaner and cleaner and cleaner. And when Dante arrives at the top, he's back in the Garden of Eden. It's a reflection of the dark forest, but it's perfectly harmonious. It's incredibly beautiful. And there's this one detail. I know I've been talking for a long time, but you asked me a question I loved. There's this detail, and then I won't talk very much more, that I never heard anyone talk about before. I just read it. At the very top of the purgatorio, in order to move to paradise, he has to be bathed in two sides of a river. And on one side, it's called the Lethe, which means oblivion. And as he gets dunked into the river by angels, he forgets everything he ever did wrong. And then they take him to the other side, which is called the Uno, or beautiful thinking. And as they dunk him there, he remembers everything he ever did right. Now he's forgotten. He's literally forgotten his mistakes. He has embraced what he has done as a human being that has made him purer, more beautiful than he was before he was human. And as he climbs through paradise, which is gets very magical, he looks down and he says, I look down at the earth, the little threshing floor that so incites our savagery. It's just this little place. And he was so miserable there. And he, as he goes up into paradise, he just finds that his nature is to join with the light that moves that moves the sun and the other stars. I think he had a genuine enlightenment experience the way Asian mystics did. And this was his story about it.
It's beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing.
And sharing.
You are here to share and share and share. I'm so grateful to listen. And it's really for me, and I'm not saying that easily, I really mean it, is the way you wrote it and that you took this story as the metaphor of our own way to integrity. I think it's so helpful because it takes it out of this very theoretical construct where we all go like, yeah, of course I know it's better to be in my integrity, but
right.
Yeah, it's just like this theoretical construct, but no one really knows how to go into it. And I think with the story in itself is already so healing. Just, I remember when I was listening and this moment where you say this, that he has to move like through the middle of the earth. And in that moment, he moves up again. I was like, oh my God, that is so brilliant. Yeah.
Every bit of suffering you have ever done in your life has moved you closer to your own joy. Yeah. But you have to keep going.
Yes.
You have to learn from everything that hurts and learn that it's not supposed to hurt. I had one of those experiences, kind of like a near-death experience, but I wasn't nearly dead. I was in surgery and a light appeared to me. I wrote all about it in the book. And it filled me with the most exquisite joy. I could go on and I do in the book, but for now, I'll just say that it felt more real to me than anything else that has ever happened to me before or since. And what it said was, this joy you're feeling now, which was very different from what I was feeling in my usual life, this joy, this absolute divine paradisical feeling, this is the way you're meant to feel while you're alive. Wow. Don't wait for death to do this. Do whatever it takes to come back, to stay here. Stay with me. I said, I will always be with you, but you have to be conscious that I'm there with you. And as you do that, you won't be able to lie without losing connection. So from there on, I came out of that surgery. I was 29 years old and I left my job, my industry. I was a professor. I left academia. My religion, which was, I was raised in a very intensely religious community. So that meant all my friends were gone. All my family of origin, many, many, many people. My marriage, realized I was gay. So there were like, pretty much everything went on the fire after that because I would not do something that would take me away from that light. And I knew it was with me and I knew it would sustain me, and it did. And it's there for all of us.
It's so beautiful. I just, while you were talking, I just remembered, and I told the story a few times on my podcast, when I was I was around 21 and I was in a train. That was when I was like in my depression, and I was in a train. It was in winter. It was a few days before Christmas, and I was so depressed and I was looking out and it was so dark. And it's so beautiful because exactly what you described happened to me in that train.
Oh, wow.
Just for like, maybe it was like 3 seconds, I felt this light, like this immense light, this joy, this feeling I never experienced before. And I remember I was sitting in this train and I was looking around like in this German train, and like, I was like, oh my God, did you all just feel this? Like, I was like, hey, like, what is going on? And everyone around me was just like sitting there, like how people were sitting in the train. And right. I remember that I was like, the only thought I had in that moment was like, okay, wait, this feeling, it was inside of me. So it's inside of me. So all I have to do is to find it again. So I knew I just felt it for 3 seconds, but I will devote my life to feel it 24/7.
Oh, so, my gosh, that's so
and this
true.
Is where my own spiritual journey began. This was the moment where I was like, okay, I'm going to do everything I can in my life to stay in that feeling. So kind of, I can really, really feel this that went inside of you, and you just go like, okay, this is where I'm going and I nowhere else.
Isn't that? Thank you for telling me that story. I'm obsessed with other people's stories that are like this, and they're more common than you'd think, you know?
Yeah.
Because we really do hide them in our culture. I think it's cut away our spirituality. It's kind of like you read Freud and he's all obsessed with sexuality because his version of culture cut out sexuality, which is a normal part of us. Well, our culture now cuts out our spirituality, which is a normal part of us, and even deeper and more important for our happiness, I think, than sexuality, although it all combines together. Nothing is lost because integrity includes it all, right? But people are having these experiences and you don't want to talk about it for fear that you'll be culturally ridiculed. That's where you're in purgatory now. So, you know, I've had so many people tell me they had a bolt from the blue like yours, and then they lost it. But you can't lose it. No. As you said, it's inside of you. But look what you're doing right now here, running this podcast for millions of listeners, because you went through the purgatory.
Yeah.
Through the cleansing, like the deliberately acting on what you now knew to be true in your heart.
Yeah.
And you've held that. And I'm sure you've had, you know, academic or atheistic people say, oh, it's just so woo, you know, you're being airy-fairy. But the very success of this podcast shows that people, we can't cut out our spirituality. No. And we are having experiences of something divine that wants us to be happy. And I'm just so grateful you're talking about it.
And you just said something very important, because most people, I think it's our most natural, what you just said. It's like, this is how we are supposed to walk through life in this connection. Yeah. So I think we all have this, like this little chip in our heart, like this little, like universal kind of chip information we all carry inside of ourselves.
Yeah.
where we know this is true. And I think this is what we are all longing for. And this is where the spiritual journey begins. But what you just said is we lose it, or we think we lose it. And then when we look for it in the outside, and we get even more depressed because we can't find it. Yeah. So what would you say, how can people, or like, how did you, after you had that experience, and you just said like you came out as gay, you left your family, your religion, like you made some major big
it was like, not easy decisions. I'm not gonna lie, it was very, very frightening and difficult. That's all right, you know.
But I would like to go there, because I think, and I really want to hear your thoughts on this, because I think the only way that is, or the only thing that is in the way of being in this light, is our fear of the consequences moving towards it. So we kind of, we know the light is there or in here, but we think like we first have to accomplish all these things, or like prove or whatever, before we can live it. So what would you say to someone who is maybe in a similar situation like you've been, who knows, for example, I'm gay and I like, I would really like to tell the people around me, but I'm afraid, or I am like, I would like to have this vision and go for this, or whatever it is that kind of would bring you back to your integrity, but I'm so afraid. So how do we move through fear?
Yeah, I was just telling you, this question comes up so often that my next book, which I'm in the middle of writing, is about how fear is the deepest of lie of all, but it's very, very convincing. Yeah. Even our brains can get tricked into thinking that fear is an absolute reality. And then what people try to do is they try to get above the feeling of negativity while staying in their culture. And that's the climbing the golden mountain, right? Everybody's trying to climb it. Nobody's going through the door that says abandon all hope. But if you really, really find the light inside you, the light that you saw or felt on that train, it can act like, you know, I've written about it as the North Star before. It's the one point that never moves. And I, over 30 years of coaching people all over the world, you know, people who were homeless on the streets, people who were billionaires, the same statement comes across in all these different cultures, all these different situations, as putting people in their integrity more than any other statement. So if anybody out there is listening and thinking, I don't know what to do, start by saying to yourself, I am meant to live in peace. I am meant to live in peace. And just repeat that a few times and feel how it resonates through your body, through your, you know, your emotional and physical heart. Feel how deeply it relieves that pressure of thinking, oh, I have to find peace somewhere. No, just, I am meant to live in peace. That knowledge never goes away. I've talked to people in maximum security prisons. They still have that. So from there, you can, that's what I call your sense of truth. And your test, when you come to a life situation, is to find the beliefs about that situation that keep you in your sense of truth. So if somebody says, oh, I'm gay and I'm afraid to come out to my family about it, what they have to do is look at the fear. I may lose them, and that may be true. I lost my family when I left Mormonism. I may be ridiculed. I may be, the society is prejudiced against me. Yes. Yeah. Those are all true. Go deeper. Because of that, it would be a bad thing for me to follow my integrity. It would be a bad thing for me to do what I most want to do in my deepest heart of hearts. It's too dangerous. So it's too dangerous to live my truth. Sit with that thought. It's too dangerous to live my truth. And then go back to, I am meant to live in peace. I am meant to live in peace. It has a different feeling to it, right? And every single person in the world, except maybe my son who has Down syndrome, has that thought, if I am my true self, bad things will happen to me. Because that's what culture is. I like the parallel of nature and culture. So you're born in integrity. That is your nature. before you're even old enough to talk, you have learned that sometimes the people around you aren't pleased with your true nature. Like when you're screaming in a restaurant, for example. And so you stop doing it. You sell yourself out to culture hard before you're even 6 months old. I mean, I could show you the research. Babies start altering their behavior and they lose touch with what they really want. So having appropriate social behavior is great. Losing track of your truth is not great. So when I speak to large groups, sometimes I'll say in the middle of a, you know, they're in a ballroom in a hotel somewhere. And I'll say, okay, I'm going to stop my speech for a minute and just make sure everyone's comfortable. Is everybody comfortable? They're all like, yes. And then I really push it. Seriously, are you comfortable right now? And they're like, yes, absolutely. Go on with your speech. And then I ask for a show of hands, if you were home alone by yourself right now, how many of you would be sitting in the position you're in right now? Nobody. And then I say, well, why not? And they have to really think, you know, these CEOs and stuff, they're like, why would I be sitting? Oh, because this isn't very comfortable. So the problem is not that they're uncomfortable. That's fine. It's tolerable. The problem is that they looked at me in clear daylight and lied to my face many times and did not realize it. They didn't say, I'm uncomfortable, but it's okay. They said, I'm comfortable. That's different.
Wow, that is so deep. Yeah.
Yeah. And so we end up doing, like, living insanely uncomfortable lives. I was like a good Mormon getting a PhD from Harvard and trying to be a Mormon wife and mother at the same time. And I was in a straight relationship when I was really gay. And I was, it was not comfortable. It was profoundly uncomfortable. And that was where the light found me.
Wow.
And so I had to, it said, this joy is what you're meant to feel. Move toward what makes you feel this way. And I can tell you that about 85, 90% of the time, I feel that way now.
That's
and
amazing.
Have for many years.
But would you say that before the light found you, would you say that you were aware of how uncomfortable you were? Or would you also say you were like one of the CEOs being like, no, I'm okay.
Something was wrong. I mean, mm-hmm. I would put my kids to bed, wait for my husband to go to sleep, and then just go and sit in this big chair and cry for like 3 hours every night. I had very little energy. I would go to my job as a professor and feel so weak that I couldn't open the door.
Oh, wow.
But when I went to do other things, I suddenly got stronger. I had for 10 years been afflicted by multiple autoimmune diseases. So I was always in pain. A lot of research shows that when you're not telling the truth, even if you don't know you're not telling the truth, the effect on the body is immediate. They did this one test where they just asked people not to lie very much for the next few weeks. And they had another group who just told a story and didn't make a lie pledge. Three weeks later, the people who said they would lie less had fewer illnesses, fewer doctor visits, fewer headaches, sore throat. Immediately. It wasn't even a tightly controlled study. So my body was telling me everything's wrong. I was constantly in pain. I couldn't sit, stand, lie, or use my hands without excruciating pain. My insides were degenerating, and I was only 29. And then I came out, and all of those diseases, which are supposed to be incurable, went away when I started living a life of integrity and dealing with the truly painful disruption of all my relationships and my situation, my career, and everything else. It's worth it. It's worth it.
Before we go there, because I think it's really important to also talk about, like, how do we deal with this breakups, like with this loss of people we love in a certain way.
Yeah.
When you talked about the, like, being in this living lie, you just said that in the study, it showed that when we lie less, we are more healthy.
Yeah.
And So it's not only that we say lies, we live lies. So
absolutely.
If we live lies, I mean, this is even more intense than just saying a lie. I think we really need to let this drop in what that means to for the body. And isn't it interesting that our body has like this built-in lie detector that like goes off or on kind of when you live a lie and tells you by like illness? Something's, isn't that amazing? I mean, it's so cool when you think about it.
Your body is a magical lie detector. That's why actual lie detectors work, because the body does things to tell you when you're lying. Yeah, it is. We have all the navigational equipment to go to paradise within ourselves, but we keep climbing the golden mountain and we never even use the equipment. The equipment will tell you, go through that door, you know, look at your demons in the eyes one at a time and break the chains that bind them. That is what you will feel at the deepest, deepest location of your desire.
So there's this,
magical. It is. Yeah. The whole thing's, it's not magic, but I just think that there are things science hasn't explained and we call them magic, but, and what we know is about this much, and what we don't know is like this much. Yeah,
that's true. There's this amazing like picture, like it's a comic picture, and there are two lines of people. So the one line, there are like hundreds of people in line, and it just says like on this little house there, like medical treatment for illnesses, like get your pill here. And then there's the other line, there's one person standing, and there it just says like self-healing and looking like to the root cause of your illness.
So telling.
Like we all just like, of course, go to the line where we just get like the pill and we don't feel it anymore, and no one wants to take the line which is actually healing us, but you have to put the work in, right?
But you know what, there's more than that, Laura, because if you go to the line that says self-healing and working with it, so I got 3 degrees from Harvard. I was in academia for a long time. And if you show those two signs to someone at Harvard, they, at least the culture there, I don't know about what people really felt, but the culture was, if you go stand in that line that says inner work and wellness, we will mock you and belittle you and ostracize you and ruin you as hard as we can, because the culture wants us to take the pill. I mean, think about the pharmaceutical company that made the pill. I mean, they've got a lot to gain. If you start looking inside and healing yourself, that's not so great for the economic structures. And I'm not just talking about pharmaceuticals. I'm talking about
everything.
Everything. The culture doesn't want you to follow your true nature.
No.
And that's why it's always, always scary to reclaim your integrity. And it's always worth it.
And let's dive into this, because you kind of lost so many things where we think we should stick to it. And at the same time, you won yourself, like you got yourself back in your entire whole being. What helped you? Because, or in a question, was there ever a moment afterwards that you doubt the decision?
Doubt the decision? No. Mm-hmm. Because as long as I could feel the light, it was so true. It was so much truer than anything else I'd done that brought me misery. But did I grieve deeply, deeply, deeply? Yeah. If you're fortunate enough to be born into a culture that really fits your true nature, your losses will be minimal and you won't have to grieve that much. If for whatever reason you end up in a situation that's very different from your true nature, the way I did, you're going to have to, I'm going to use Asian enlightenment language now. You are going to have to break your ego loose from almost everything it's attached to if you want to be free. And I think, this is my personal belief, I'm not blaming anyone else for like creating their own problems, I believe my soul wanted to have its ego structures broken. There was a sense that it had to happen, even as it was going on. I mean, it was a lot like giving birth, extraordinarily painful, inconvenient, and frightening, potentially lethal. There were times when I really thought I would be killed. I wrote a book about the Mormon church that was not positive. It was about love and faith, but it kind of wasn't thrilled about Mormonism per se. My father was a big cheese in the Mormon church, like a big, big cheese. And he was also completely insane. And I sort of wrote about that. And so I really thought that I had death threats and I thought that I might be killed for it. What was the question?
How did you deal with like you said, you never doubted, but you did grieve about the losses. Yeah.
You know, I have to say, I read Dante first when I was 18, and I kept getting that image of going, just driving through the center of hell toward the light. So I'd had this light experience, and I had this image of if I go toward that light, it's going to take me down and down and down into deeper and deeper levels of sorrow. I'm going to experience bigger levels of fear. I will experience some anger as I break free from things, and enormous loss. I lose the whole Golden Mountain, right? I turn my back on the entire Golden Mountain and go through this difficult path. But something in me said, this is the way to paradise. This is the only way. And so at the deepest level, I didn't have any doubt. Wow. If I had, it would have killed me. I couldn't have done it.
So would you say that we should kind of distance ourselves from the feelings of that if we are grieving, if we are afraid, that that means that the way is wrong? You know what? Yes. I mean? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I'm getting very excited because now I can tell you an exercise from the book I'm writing
okay.
now.
Perfect. Let's
All
go.
Right. So I have a method for this because okay. fear is so paralyzing. You know, yes. there are a lot of people. Yes. I had my Harvard degrees and everything. I had a place to go. So I don't think that everybody should be able to just leap off a cliff. Although, you know, they say if you do that, you grow wings or whatever. But I don't want to put people through suffering unduly. So here's how I would deal with the fear now, or how I deal with it with clients now. So feel that terror, whatever fear you have coming up. You've just been through a divorce. I'm sure all the fears came up for you. They always do. And feel it in your body. But then imagine that you can take the fear and surround it with light in your imagination and gently move it away from yourself to a place where you can have a conversation with it. This is your frightened self, yeah? And it's sitting in front of you, and it's at peace for now. It's waiting for you. Now, your job, once the fear has been externalized just a little bit, is to imagine the space where it was filling up with a very bright light and a very sweet sensation. So go to any experience of deep connection with another being that you've had. It could be a pet or a baby or whatever. And then, I mean, one of mine was when I was in a children's choir and we were singing this amazing music and it filled me with this energy I didn't understand. And it just, so put on your most beautiful music, cuddle up with your cat or whatever it is and feel that peace inside you. Now, the part of you that's afraid is facing you. And here's what you say to it. You get to be as frightened as you want. I fully 100% accept you. I'm on your side. I would never ask you to do something that was too hard. I love you. I'm grateful to you for scaring me away from things that might have hurt me. And I intend to take really good care of you. And you can be my advisor if that's okay with you. And what does your fear say back?
And just relaxes.
It relaxes a little. So then gather it back in and let it feel the warmth of that light within you. And say, you see, this is a little bit of the way it's going to taste and feel when you are in complete harmony with love. Because the Bible's right. There is no fear in love. For perfect love casteth out all fear. That's the English version I know. And the word to cast isn't passive. It means to actively throw away your fear. And that's what perfect love does. So when you embrace your fear, in its sense of weakness and vulnerability and fill it with love, you start to shift the energy inside you. And I got to tell you, even working with other people, trying to get them in integrity, using this really gentle, accepting response toward their anger has meant that people make massive changes so much faster, and there's no drama. They don't have as many arguments with their fellow beings. Something about loving your own fear and then including it as part of your integrity allows everything to be very gentle. Yeah. I wasn't like that. I was a fighter, and I was like, I burst out of everything that held me captive, and I wounded myself a lot, but that was my personality. Now I prefer to just love my fear, and then it lets me do things as an advisor.
Mm. That's beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing. And I had a similar experience the last year with my anger, and I had so much trouble accepting how angry I was, and I was in so much resistance towards this, like, there was not like a little bit of anger. It was big time. And the moment I started to do what you just said, to really like honor the anger, and I understood that there is something as healthy anger. Like,
you
it's healthy to be angry sometimes, because that anger led me to this place of integrity inside of myself.
Oh, absolutely.
Where I understood like who I want to be, and that something is like big time crossing my borders. Yeah. So
Anger is a messenger telling us that something is unjust. And the reason it knows what is unjust is it finds it in our sense of truth. Mm-hmm. So the anger is saying, I'm pointing for you to the very thing that is unjust. You either vocalize your anger, you know, get the system to change, or leave it, but don't just, you know, bow to it and let it order you around. That splits you from your anger, and that's not integrity. Bring your anger in. Hear where the injustice is, figure out what you can do to make justice, yourself feel that your actions are just, move forward.
One more question, because I think sometimes there is a bit of a misunderstanding also when we talk about like being on our spiritual path or on our way to integrity, that the moment we found it, like the moment we are back in our integrity, that there won't be any challenges anymore, that there won't be any like really difficult in your face moments where you just go like, whew, like how do we deal differently with challenges that life of course still throws at us, right? I mean, only because you are now in your integrity, would you, maybe I ask it differently, would you even say that it's more challenging to live in integrity than to not live in integrity?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. Because I have to do everything in public. And I've written a book called The Way of Integrity. If I'm out of integrity, like I wrote a story in there about how I shouldn't eat eggs. They don't make me feel bad, but my doctor told me not to eat them. But sometimes when I get really defiant, I eat eggs. And I put that in the book. And then a couple of months ago, I went to dinner with or lunch with an editor from Switzerland, and I got eggs. And she's like, I thought you were in integrity. I was like, oh, damn, I'm eating eggs again. Oh no. Yeah, you get, like right now in particular, like to put your head up in for example, the internet is to have people throw things at you that you don't know how to deal with. Like all the rage in the world seems to be burbling around. And the more comfort and internal power we can access, the more other energies seem to like notice it and maybe attack it for some reason. Sounds very mystical. But it's harder and harder. But I studied martial arts for about 8 years, and I wouldn't want to go on doing my yellow belt test every day. You know, like when I got a new belt, I was very excited to have people attack me in new ways. And because that's why I was there. And I think that our souls are here to play in matter. And that when we play a game, really play a game, when you watch people playing a game like professional soccer, football, you call it there, like they bleed, they sweat, they cry, and it's wonderful. You know, and if you sent out the German national football team to play against a bunch of 6-year-olds, they would not enjoy the experience. We want to be pushed. It's our nature to push matter as far as it will go in this particular incarnation, so that we can take jewels back home.
That's beautiful.
To our spirits. Yeah.
I have one, just an impulse, maybe because you're writing this book of how to deal with anxiety, maybe you can fit in a chapter about this particular thing, like how, what you just said, like this mystical thing, the more you move into light, you kind of become this magnet of everything mm-hmm. that doesn't want you to be in this light. And I think many people are really afraid of owning their light because they know, well, that will piss a lot of people off.
Yes.
If you're yes. So maybe, I don't know if it fits in that book, but maybe in a future book of yours, I'd be happy to read it.
Oh yeah, that'll be in there because it is a very real thing. And so is the kind of energy vampire thing where people will attach and be victim-y and try to like pull light from someone. Yeah. The irony is, you know, I have a son, one of my big integrity challenges was in late pregnancy. I was pregnant. My son was diagnosed with Down syndrome and I had to choose whether or not to terminate the pregnancy. And I'm not against it politically or ethically, but I didn't want to. It wasn't my truth. So I have this son with Down syndrome. And one day, sadly, his best friend who also has Down syndrome lost his mother. She died of cancer. And we went to the funeral and it was so sad. Adam was about 19. And as we drove home, he said, I didn't cry, Mom. And I said, yeah, but if you want to cry, it's fine. Even strong men cry at sad times. And this is sad. And he said, and this is a kid who barely talks. He said, well, it's not so bad after the light comes and touches your heart. And I was like, wait, a light came and touched your heart? And he said, I said, when did this happen? And he said, May 10th. And I was like, oh, so we're talking about a specific incident. I said, where were you? I was in my bedroom. Was it this year? No, it was about 5 years ago. And he had been sitting in his bedroom and this light, when he'd been feeling sad, teenager with Down syndrome, and a light appeared and touched him and told him, you can do this, you can do this. And he said, yeah, it's better since then. And I said, wow. I said, I've seen it too, Adam. And he was like, really? Like, he didn't think I had it in me. And I said, so the light told me that even though we can't see it, it's always with us. And Adam said, oh, I can see it. And I was like, what? You like now? You can see it now? And he was like, yeah. And I said, well, where is it? Is it like up in the corner? Is it in your head, in your heart? And he just shook his head and he said, Mom, it's everywhere. It is. It is in us and through us and around us. And the only thing that makes us unaware of that fact is the little skiff of lies in our heads. Coming back to integrity brings us into that light, and it really is easier after the light touches your heart.
Yeah, that is so beautiful. And for everyone listening right now, do you have maybe a small advice how someone who hasn't yet got in touch with that light in their heart, how can we get in contact? Like, is there something you do proactively to connect?
Yes. Yeah. Find the part of you that is suffering the most. So it might be just a little, it might be a lot. And no matter how you actually feel about that part of yourself that is grieving, that is afraid, that is angry, ask it, what is the kindest thing that I can do for you? Offer it kindness. Offer your most shackled, anguished part simple kindness. Could I get you a cup of tea? Do you want to be wrapped in a blanket? Do you need a few minutes alone? Should we go outside? What can I do? I'm here for you. And it is kindness that sees through the lie of truth. I think I just misspoke. I said it's kindness that sees through the lie of truth. And I meant it's kindness that sees through the lie of fear.
Of fear. Martha, really, thank you so much. I'm so grateful. I feel so much love for you. And I would love to hug you and just tell you.
I am hugging you now.
How amazing you are and what a gift you are really to all the women. really to also find integrity, because I think it's so important for us to really move into the space of power inside of ourselves to really change this world. So in the name of all the women, also thank you for the work you do and for you moving into this place inside of yourself and holding the space for us to follow. So thank you, thank you, thank you. All the best towards your side of the world. Take care. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
See you soon, I hope. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Ich hoffe, dass du ganz viel aus diesem Gespräch für dich mitnehmen konntest und ja, dich jetzt auch ganz beseelt fühlst, dich verbunden fühlst mit dir, dir selber den Raum gibst, um in deine eigene Integrität mehr reinkommen zu dürfen, dich wirklich mit deiner eigenen Vollständigkeit zu verbinden und dem Leben zu vertrauen, deinem Weg zu vertrauen und zu wissen, es ist ein Prozess und wir alle stehen immer wieder vor Herausforderungen, aber wir sind alle füreinander da. Und danke an der Stelle auch wirklich einfach für diese unfassbare Community. Danke für all die Liebe, die ihr euch gegenseitig schenkt. Danke für die Liebe, die ihr mir schenkt, die ihr meinem Team schenkt. Und ich bin so unfassbar dankbar für diese Verbindung, die wir alle miteinander haben, für die Liebe, die da ist in dieser Community. Und dafür stehe ich jeden Tag auf, dafür liebe ich es, diese Podcasts aufzunehmen. Und das ist ja etwas, was mich zutiefst, zutiefst erfüllt und dankbar macht. Also danke, dass du Teil bist von dieser Community. Und wie immer freue ich mich natürlich, wenn du bei Instagram vorbeischaust, @LauraMarlinaSeiler. Lass mir gerne, gerne, gerne deine Gedanken zu der Folge da. Teil die Folge. Bring sie raus in die Welt und ja, ich schicke dir eine große Umarmung. Es ist so schön, dass es dich gibt. Ganz viel Liebe zu dir, ganz viel Freude zu dir, ganz viel positive Energie zu dir. Hab einen wunderschönen Tag und rock on und Namaste, deine Laura.